Behavioral Health Integrations podcast strives to inspire the next generation of mental health and addiction specialists. Our aim is to continue to raise awareness and encourage collaboration in the mental health and addiction industry so that it will continue to thrive. There are numerous approaches to treating mental health and substance abuse issues. On this show, we take pleasure in showcasing the diversity of these approaches used to improve the lives of others. So without further ado, your host, Jacob Minnig.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Behavior Health Integration episode. Today, I have the great pleasure of having Dr. Miriam Zilbergate on as a special guest. Miriam is a virtual well-being medical doctor. She's a mother, wife, physician, educator, and well-being advocate, and the number one bestseller, author, The 3G Cycle of Life, The Secrets for Achieving Joy, Meaning, and Well-Being. And on this episode, we will be talking about many different aspects that really inspired Miriam to become a doctor, how to, again, improve the healthcare field, and as well, what really motivated her to begin the process of the 3G Cycle of Life. On this episode, we will be talking about many different aspects of self-care when it comes to medical doctors, what we can do to, again, help medical doctors prevent burnout and stress so they can better help their patients. I, for one, am truly excited to get this episode started. So without further ado, let's begin. Miriam, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
So where are you calling out of again?
Where I am right now?
Yeah.
Miami, Florida.
Miami, oh my God. I was there a few weeks ago. Me and my family were building a house in the Keys, Ducky.
Wow.
So again, it's just absolutely beautiful all year round. And
so next time you need to let me know, and we will know each other like in real life, not virtual.
Absolutely. No, I heard just Miami is just beautiful. I've only ever really been there in the airport. I never really got to spend any time there, but I heard it's amazing.
You know what? I am maybe very simple on this, but I feel like places are amazing because of the people that live there. You know, if you have your family, you have your friend, doesn't matter too much what's going on, you will be happy and you will enjoy it. So I see it like that, but I have to accept that we have beaches and we have a good social life, right? For those that like to go out, I am not there anymore. I am a mom now. It's a nice place to be.
So you moved around a lot, right? I forgot, where did you grow up again?
So I grew up in Peru, and I have been, like, I came to this country just 12 years ago. So okay. I am relatively new, kind of, not anymore. Time's life. And I grew up, I went to medical school there, practiced medicine for 10 years for the Navy of my country, and then I met my husband that was living here in Miami.
Okay.
And you know, life happens, and suddenly I was getting married and moving to a new country.
So growing up, what motivates you to become a doctor?
I didn't want to be a doctor, and
oh,
I
didn't.
Know that is very disappointing. I wanted to be someone that will be helping others. That was my goal. I didn't, when I was a girl, I didn't know how to call that, but I knew that that was my role in life, that I want to help others. When I was growing up, what happened is that I discovered psychology, and I kind of got, hi, Melissa. And I also discovered psychology, and I thought that that was the best way to help others. And I wanted to be a psychologist, but my best friend in school, she wanted to be a doctor. And she came one day and convinced me, and she told me, you know what? I'm going to medical school. I am applying. What about you apply with me? Instead of being a psychologist, you will be a psychiatrist. We will be together, you know, for the rest years of medical school in Peru. Is you do seven or 8 years all together, not like here pre-med. And you will earn more money. Everybody will call you a doctor. You will have a white coat. And it sounds very reasonable. when I went home and I told that to my parents, they didn't know if they should laugh or they should get upset because I used to faint in front of blood. So being a doctor was not for me. But I pushed enough to to go there. It was the best decision, for sure.
You know, I'm not going to lie. A particular stereotype, not like anything to do with like race or anything, but when I hear stories of like people like not wanting to be doctors, they always tell me it was always their parents that forced them to be doctors or wanted them to go to med school. So this is kind of like a nice refreshing story that it wasn't like your parents like forcing you to do this, you know, something you don't want to do for money or prestige.
The story got to a point that they really want to scare me good enough. Mm-hmm. So I say no. So I used to live in front, like door to door, in front of a very, very well-known gynecologist in my country. Oh. So they went to her and they explained the problem. And they created this plan of me, I was probably 14, 15, going with her to a C-section, fainting in the middle of the event, and that will be enough to traumatize me and I will change my mind, right? So they wake me up on Saturday, like at 3 a.m. and they made me, you know, get dressed, no breakfast for me. She drive me to the hospital, a private clinic, and in Peru, and I don't know how things are right now. I don't want to judge. It's a long time that I'm not there, but HIPAA didn't exist. And I mean, you can go with all your family inside of the OR and nobody will care, right? So she made me dress with a scrub and she made me clean my hands. I believe that she abused me because I have the feeling that she made me clean my hands for the double of time that I was supposed to. So I am very, you know, itchy. Yep. And then I am in the OR and they are waiting for me to faint. And a miracle happened because even if there was blood and a baby and a lot of things probably that majority of kids at 15 never saw in their life.
Wow.
I love it. It was a miracle of life. Something happened inside of me that day that it was, oh my goodness, this is who I am. Yep. So she brought me back. She took me to get breakfast. She brought me back home. She knocked the door. And she's like, congratulations, you have a doctor in the family. And my parents
are
like, what?
That was
my plan. that was the story. So
where's your friend now?
So she decided not to go to medical school. She got scared like a few days after.
Yeah.
And I was not able to change my mind. Do you imagine if I go back to my parents and tell them like, no, I changed my mind. That's not possible. So now she's in the business world and she's a mom and, you know, she has a very different life than the one that she planned. And I have a different life than the one that I planned to. Yep. But I have to be very grateful with Jenny. Jenny, that's her name. Jenny really directed me to a place that I will never choose by myself. You know, and probably that's the story of my complete life, right? I have been doing things that I never planned or that I thought that were I was not good enough for. And when they were in front of me, when I was super scared and you know, confused and etc., for some reason, I had the support of others and my own inner strength, I guess, to jump into the pool, even without knowing if there was water there. And I found water. And probably something that I learned, you know, after all these situations, in unexpected situations, is that you need to embrace change and you need to embrace opportunities, right? Don't say no when luck knocks your door. Try.
Absolutely. Now, I'm sure Peru is like very similar to like American med school, but you do your like basic first 4 years studying medicine, and then you choose a specialty or multiple specialties, right?
Kind of. It's not like here, to be sincere. And if you ask me, I rather, with all the respect, the education that I receive in Peru than the one that I see that medical students receive here. Because we started seeing patients, even not 100% in a clinical way, but at least to interact with them since the first year. Oh, so okay. you are 17, 18 when you get into medical school, right? Mm-hmm. And yes, you're doing biochemistry, which probably a lot of us, we hated, mm-hmm. and, you know, and biology yeah. or histology, right? And we are like, why we are doing this? This is awful. But then you have this... few minutes here and there of interaction with patients, and it's a good reminder that why you are doing mm-hmm. What you are doing, and you know, the human part and the human application of what you are learning. And I feel in my heart, to be sincere, that if I will be in a typical pre-med school, right, probably mm-hmm. I will never make it to be a doctor. The reason why I stay in medical school was because I had the opportunity to go and touch, you know, the lives of people since day one, and that's kind of the reason why I am a doctor, right? Yes, I like science and I like procedures and I like the adrenaline, yes, but there is something, Dr. Levin, nice to see you there. Thank you so much for joining us. Wonderful doctor and an excellent okay. role model.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah. And I believe that the reason why I'm a doctor is because I want to be with people. I want to help people. Mm-hmm. And that's vitamin for my soul. Makes me feel happy. It makes me feel well. So, yeah, that's the difference between our system and the American system, or vice versa, okay. the Peruvian system.
Now, didn't you do your training in America with residencies and stuff?
Yes, I came yeah. and I after being for 10 years and attending in my country, and actually I was an academic physician. I was training already residents and medical wow. students there. Yes, yeah. I came when I was around my 40, so I came out as an adult here. I got married old. I have my kids old. And I had to start almost from zero, right? You don't mm-hmm. you don't do again medical school, but you need to take a lot of tests that we call the step one, step two, step yes. three. And for those that have an idea, those are not easy tests.
I heard it's horrendously challenging.
Yeah, you can be 9 or 8, 9 hours taking the test.
Miriam, I heard horror stories. There's this financial channel that like people go to because they're student loans. And this one medical school student was so depressed because he couldn't pass the MSNLs or...
Yes.
And after a certain amount of times, you get kicked out of school if you can't. Yes. And he had all the student loans and he didn't have the medical doctor at his name.
And you cannot have
that. Yeah. Oh my God.
The USMLEs. Yes, the tests are very complex and very long. And I believe that in big part they test your medical knowledge, but they also test your ability to take tests. And something that's very important is they test your resilience and your emotional intelligence, right? So there is an academic part, but there is a part where are you able to continue for the next 8 hours, for the next 7 hours, 6 hours? Are you able to go to the next group of questions when you know that this group of questions was a disaster and you know that you did something wrong here and you are collapsing mm-hmm. and you're nervous? Are you able to recover and go to the next block? So you need to have this maturity. And I believe that... in my case, probably being older, the probability of passing this test because of the new medical knowledge was mm. low. You have, right? I was very scared. It's like, I really need to yeah. learn things that they didn't exist at when I went to medical school, right? They were like, I saw my first MRI when I was already, you know, an attending. Yeah. Those things didn't exist.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you have the maturity and you have the resilience that the experience gave you, right, with time, that okay, you need to come back to your center, mm. calm down and keep going, because these 5 minutes is not the end, right? There are 4 more hours to go and you need to be in good shape.
Oh man, just I have ADD, so just imagining that is just pure like torture, sitting in one spot for that many hours. Oh,
I did something for that. I train. So I received a very good recommendation from a friend of mine that told me, train your brain and body the same that you train for medicine, right? So I will have, I study like 10 to 14 hours daily for probably a year and a half. That was the time that I took to pass all the steps. And I will have periods or days that I will call everybody and do not call me, do not call me. And I will simulate the test exactly like if I am doing it. The seconds that I have to run to the bathroom, how much I can eat of my chocolate, is better the chocolate with the coffee or should I get Coke? Or so I did this 8 hours of taking the test in the similar circumstances. So I train myself like if I was going to a marathon, really, like if I was going to, I don't know, the Olympics. So at the moment of the test, my body was trained for the circumstances. The only thing that I was supposed to focus was in answering the questions correctly and make sure that I go back to my knowledge. But the extra, right, the anxiety of not knowing what will happen, if you need to go to the bathroom or not, if you need to eat at the time.
When do you know your score? Do you know if you got an answer right, or do they tell you if you passed it right away, or do you wait and wait and wait for the results?
I believe it's like 4 weeks or maybe more. I was scared. I didn't know. I didn't know. I don't think that any of us goes out of this test feeling confident. I will be surprised. I was very scared. I was very successful with my scores. I was very happy. The exercise experiment helped me tremendously. And I actually recommend medical students and people like me applying or anybody that is going for a long test to train their body, right? Not only their brain, because the brain is not enough. This is a marathon, really.
Yeah, it really gets into the aspect of like mind, body, and spirit all need to be one.
We need to function in balance. That is the reality. That's how we are successful, right? We cannot be very good in this and very bad in that and have a good result. We need to have this, you know, balance that allow us to rebound and to have the resources, because again, you can be very smart, and I believe that this is something that we see a lot in medicine and in many other careers, right, of super achievers. We consider that being very smart, right, having a high IQ, is the same that being successful, which is not necessarily the case, or having an emotional intelligence, or high emotional intelligence. And the truth is that those are two different measurements, right? And one thing is that you are excellent with numbers and you have a great memory and you are very good at studying, but are you able to use all that information in real life? Are you able to bounce back when a circumstance or a challenge is in front of you? And that's what we need to develop, and not only as physicians but as humans, right? The ability of being self-aware, right? The components of emotional intelligence that are four, depending of what do you review, 4 or 5, but being emotionally intelligent means that you are self-aware, that you recognize yourself, your gaps, your strengths, right? That you are social aware, that you recognize what is around you, that you are able to control yourself, right? So now that you know yourself, you use that in your favor to act in the appropriate way and then that you can affect the lives of others in the same way. And empathy, that we cannot live in if we are not empathetic, and if we cannot feel what is around us.
No, I have an interesting question for you, and I get this a lot. Like, do you feel, because what I've heard is that there's a major shortage in doctors in this country. And do you feel like there's an issue in how they do medical school admissions? And I wanted to use a physical therapist's example. He was in my class one day and he was talking and he's working with students, and he's working with students who wanted to get into PT school that would have made phenomenal physical therapists. They were amazing, personable, very communicative, articulate. They were great. But then there's also another category of students that are super, super, super smart, but they had no people skills. And yeah, they might make okay PTs, or in your example, doctors, but they just don't have that it factor. And unfortunately, he feels like a PT school, the admissions, they make two piles. The 3.5s, 6s are hires, and the rest don't get in. And do you see some similarities in medical school like that?
Oh, yes, yes, you will see. And I had the amazing opportunity to be in a leadership position at some point and work with residents and interview residents or applicants for residency and have to go through this difficult situation of selecting them, right? Mm. And I agree with you. Sadly, sometimes we focus more in the skills, right? The academic skills and not the, before we used to call them soft skills, now we call them functional skills, right? That is what you are saying, communication skills, empathy, and et cetera, resilience. So yes, sometimes we are too, you know, focus on the numbers, and numbers are not everything, right? You want someone that will be a kind doctor, or a kind healthcare worker, someone reliable.
But does it make the university look good if they have higher GPAs for admission? Is there prestige to it, though?
I don't think that this because of prestige. I believe that if you are dealing with thousands of applicants, right? Because that's what we see. You when you start the process of selecting, you have thousands. If you are a good institution, you have thousands of applicants. And you can, let's be clear, like you cannot read the CVs of all of them, right? Mm-hmm. So you, at some point, just for to be efficient, you need to develop some type of a selection method. And we can discuss that the 300 should not be the limit, should be 301 or should be 293, whatever, you know, I'm using a random number right now for the test. But at the end, that's arbitrary, right? It's an arbitrary selection. So how do you pick those that have more probability of finishing the training and being successful? And sadly, it's very difficult. It's not impossible, but it's very difficult to measure emotional intelligence through a paper, right? Mm-hmm. And you cannot interview 2,000, 3,000 people. So you select the most brilliant on paper, and those are the ones that have better scores. It's unfair, maybe. It's efficient, probably the most efficient way to do it.
I also think there's another factor too, because there's another podcast where I watch about like medical school, like students and selections, and like they tell like the main reason I watch it or listen to it is because they tell inspirational stories about people with 2.5 GPAs, 2.8s, literally getting into med school and like the things that they had to do to get the attention of the admissions office. So even if you get an interview, you got to do or say something to make them think about you. Because again, of all the applicants, you got to stand out in some way to get them thinking like, oh, wow, okay, that's interesting.
But that's life, right? That's life. Even
it's desperate, but you know, there's nothing wrong with that, I don't think.
No, and I feel like, again, that is a social skill, right? You not only need to be very smart, you need to act very smart, right? And you need to produce as someone that is very smart. So we it's not enough to have the skills inside of us. We need to be able to apply them. And that's something that all of us, I feel like it's very important part of education, right? How do we educate this new generation of kids? I have two boys, right? Not only on having good scores, good grades at school, but to have these other skills that will allow them to be successful in many levels of their life, right? It's not just what is your grade or, you know, you have an A plus, but are you happy with your life? Are you, do you have friends? Are you enjoying what you are doing? And we have been focusing too much in numbers and numbers, not only on grades, scores, but numbers on money, right? Or in the number of things that we collect in our life instead of on the feelings and the satisfactions that we collect.
You know, it's funny. I kind of use myself as a beginner podcaster. I've been doing it for like a year and a half. So for me to stand out and to get awesome guests like yourself, medical doctors, like,
oh, thank you.
Someone in your, but seriously, someone in your position, again, I don't remember the whole story about how we got in contact, but usually like I need to like do something because I'm still somewhat new. I don't have the most views or the downloads, but I need to find people like you. And if I want to get awesome people like you on my show, I got to sell myself. I got to give you a reason why it's important to be on my show. And then in order to do that, I got to do many different things to, again, excite you, get you interested. Even though I don't have the great numbers, it's that reason I need you to give you to be on my show.
And I will tell you the reason why I'm in your show. I don't care about your numbers. I never check. To be sincere, I will never check.
But some do. Some have told me, like, they told me, Jake, you don't have enough downloads for me. In a sense, it's wasting their time. So, and I don't take it personally. It's just the way it is.
Well, but that's the beauty of life, right? And that's the beauty of being part of a society. We will find individuals with different perspectives and mm-hmm. with different values, and we will have to decide who we are, right? And adapt to the circumstances. In my case, for example, I know why I do the podcast. And my reason to do the podcast is because I have something to share. I have a mission. And for me, it's important. And my mission is not something that I will be able to measure in numbers, right? If today I am making someone feel better or happier mm-hmm. or healthier, I mean, that makes my day, right? I wake mm-hmm. up for a good reason today. And when I see the title, right, of your podcast, and when I know that your interest is also to help people, and, mm-hmm. and when you are focusing in something as important as health, right, behavioral health, mental health, for me, is the best platform to share a message and to collaborate with you. I don't think that, and again, we forget that those that are very high right now, they were very low at some point. Mm-hmm. Nobody came to the world with a Ferrari and an yeah. MBA, you know. And yeah. We have to build our future, and we need to start from one point that is lower than the one that we will achieve the next time and the mm-hmm. next time. And that's the beauty, right? That's what allows you to go back and say, oh my goodness, I'm growing, right? I'm absolutely much better than yesterday. And I feel that that's already worth it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely, definitely. Now, as we move on, like, I know you're very passionate about, again, work-life balance, burnout. And I believe you had three specialties. Correct me if I'm wrong. You got into internal medicine, geriatric medicine, and obesity medicine.
Yes, I'm guilty of all that.
So I'm sure you had a lot on your plate. I'm not saying like you did all of them at the same time, but you had a lot of different like factors to your practice, right?
So I believe that my practice is not really out. The fact that I have three specialties is not what makes my life so hectic. I believe that also being a mom, being a daughter, being involved in you know, advocacy, writing a book, and et cetera, mm-hmm. are the things that are adding extra. But you mentioned the word balance, right? And I have been for many years trying to reach this balance, and finally I gave up. Mm-hmm. And I learned that is kind of an impossible task to achieve. And I heard a couple of nice terms that I feel that fit more my you know, my realistic expectation. And one is integration, right? How do you integrate this yeah. personal life with your professional life so they don't have a friction, right? But they don't need to be 50-50 or 40-60. They can just bounce back depending on your needs, right? And the other word that I heard and I also love is harmony, right? How do you mm-hmm. find this harmony between both of them? Because to say that we will find balance, maybe someone will be, and if someone knows the trick, please let me know, and I will apologize for giving bad information right now. But I feel like majority of us, we discovered that is very challenging, especially mm-hmm. in a society where we don't have necessarily all the support as right. women, right? to be mothers and pregnant women and professionals and wives and caregivers and etc. So I'm looking for integration, I'm looking for harmony, and I'm looking for well-being for myself. Of course, I am looking that for others, but what I have learned is that if I don't change my perspective and I don't improve my own quality of life and my own well-being, it's not only not fair, right, to try to teach others, but it's also very difficult to be a role model, and it's always also very difficult to give others when you are empty inside.
Mm-hmm. And then also just to think about the word balance, we need to understand too, like that might mean different things for different people. Like, everything needs to be equal to be balanced. Or then I hear the word self-care get thrown out a lot. And I've talked a lot about that in my episodes. Yeah, self-care is important. But again, depending on what your job is, it's almost impossible to even apply it when you, let's say, have too many clients, too many patients, too much documentation you have to do. Like, how do you, again, input that self-care in your everyday life?
But we have, and that's a challenge that I have been going through, Jacob. And I have been guilty of that for a long time. And not only that I was guilty of that, but I was very proud of that, because that's part of the mentality, right? We collect medals and trophies because we didn't sleep for a week because we were working in this project, or I was on call for 3 days and I didn't eat. And so, and we feel so, I don't know, proud, really, that's the word, right? We think that makes us smarter or more successful, which is absolutely the opposite. We need to understand that in order for us to function and to function in our maximum potential, we need to apply self-care. Mm-hmm. That when you are using self-care as a tool, right, to keep yourself happy, healthy, and in 100%, you are able to give this 100% to those that need you. But when you are in 30%, in 50%, in 20%, how much are you able to give to others, right? Yeah. So you have a responsibility. Self-care is a responsibility, especially in those that have leadership positions, especially in teachers, in any servant leader, right? Of course, healthcare worker, because if we are not okay, we will be harming others. So we have the responsibility of being okay. And that takes time and effort. So the same that we have in our agenda, many meetings and, you know, a lot of things that maybe are not even so important, we should have in our agenda self-care. And you should respect it as much as you will respect the time of a client. Because you will not have a client if you are sick in the hospital.
Yes, yes. And I'm sure you have and almost an extra level of empathy, because I'm sure you've seen a lot of depression, stress amongst even your medical students, your fellow medical students going through the process.
I am happy and sad at the same time to say that I saw a lot. Yeah. I'm happy because in some way that reinforced what I am doing and gave me a reason. I'm sad because I feel, first of all, that the level of suffering is tremendous and the outcomes are so negative. And especially I'm sad because this is preventable. And since you bring this to the table, right, and I believe that we had this conversation at some point, or we were sharing this information, in the last few years, what we have been seeing is a very high rate of depression and burnout in physicians. And I know that majority will say this happened after COVID and that's explanation, but sadly those numbers were very high before COVID. And we are talking about 65% of physicians being burnout, more than 60% of physicians having some type of depression, and 400 physicians dying by suicide every year in this country. We're talking about one or two per day.
Or even medical school students.
That includes
the suicide rate. One of the highest programs of like students committing suicide.
Yes, and nurses and other healthcare workers are in very similar rates, right? And it's very sad because we are not able to see the red flags, or we are ignoring the red flags. But even more important, because we have been training these young physicians to be resilient, to do not ask for help, to you never get tired, you don't need to sleep, you don't need to eat, you are never scared. So we created this fake, you know, community of superheroes that don't have superpowers.
Yeah.
And now we are expecting them to do things that are not feasible. Mm-hmm. And we don't give them the support that they need. Instead of that, we retaliate against them when they fail, right? Or yes. When they are afraid, or when they ask for help. And sadly, if we go to certain states in the US, we have even the situation where when you apply to your medical license or you apply to jobs, the question about your mental health will be part of it. Yes. So you are afraid to, Dr. Noopy, yes. we are afraid of even sharing or asking for help. So we see this when we are on the extremes, right? When someone is already not here.
There's punishment if you ask for help. Just from when I talk to nurses in Minnesota, they're afraid to let, there's some sort of organization that monitors like the human resource aspect to the occupations and stuff. And they say, we could lose our jobs if we admit we have a mental health problem, or we are looked down upon in the system and we're red flagged for having a mental health crisis.
Yes.
I can't say anything or else I'm going to get punished.
Yes. And I don't know in detail what happened specifically with nurses, but again, in the entire healthcare system, and this is so severe that right now there is an organization, the Lorna, Dr. Lorna Breen, that was created by a lawyer, Corey Face, that worked for the healthcare system for many years as a CEO. And he lost his sister-in-law by suicide. She was a physician, a chief in an emergency room during COVID, and she got affected. I believe depressed after having COVID and after all the things that happened. And she was so scared that the people will know that was her diagnosis that she took her own life. And so he decided to create this organization. And this organization finally was able to get the first law in the United States just probably 6 months or 8 months ago that protects the healthcare workers against burnout, right? And that was signed by the Senate and the House and finally by Biden. And then right now he's going through different states trying to convince them to remove from the application to the license, the medical license, that paragraph where we are asked about our mental health. But that demonstrates the level of, you know, how big is the problem that you have now someone or an organization trying to revert that, because the fear is so big that if you don't ask for help, how you will get better? And let me tell you the other side of the story. We are forgetting about how much this impacts patients and the community. Because for those that are not familiar with the details of what burnout means or how it looks, you're talking about an individual, doesn't matter what career.
Right. But does this evil system you're talking about, do they give a damn about if they don't give a damn about the doctors, are they going to put an effort for the patient? I don't think they care. I don't, like, from what I'm hearing, and I could be completely wrong, but
I have doubts about how much they care. I want to think that at some level they care. I don't think that they care in the same way that physicians care. And that's the problem. I feel like while we in the healthcare world, you know, we want to help people, and we see this as an act of love and maybe altruism, right? And it's not that we don't care about the money. Of course, we need to pay bills, right? Let's be realistic. But we are not focused 100% in revenue. You have the other side of this combination where, you know, there is a vision of this is a business, and I understand, I respect that, but they are in such an extreme that we don't get to get together and find this middle where we can be economically, financially successful, and we can at the same time provide appropriate healthcare to our patients because that's what they deserve, and provide the respect and the support to the healthcare workers because that's what they need in order to be able to satisfy both, right? The patient need and the financial obligations, right? But again, if you have a physician that is exhausted, right? Because that's one of the items of the criteria, that is cynic or doesn't care, right? Is not motivated to see you, right, as a patient, because that's number two for burnout. And that, by the way, is performing below the average. So I don't know how happy you will be to have a neurosurgery or a delivery of a baby or, you know, someone taking the decision of resuscitate you. With that description, I will not go in a plane with a pilot that is not motivated, is cynic, is very exhausted, and by the way, is not performing at average level.
And as the patient too, the power dynamic, if you they can sense that. They can sense that their doctor is not in a good place. Like, it takes such courage for them to even say, like, hey, I don't like the way you're acting right now, or I'm sensing something, like, bad in you. I want a different doctor. I mean, I don't even know how that would go down, but I can imagine the patient being very fearful.
I don't know if they are fearful. They are very upset, but sadly they are upset with the wrong people, and it's us, right? The nurses, the doctors. I mean, I have been receiving insults in the last few months that I never received in all my career as a physician. Patients are, and they don't attack me because something that I did. It's because of the medication that was not approved by the insurance and the referral that was not accepted by the doctor that doesn't take my insurance. And I am like, but I don't do that, you know. That's not my role. I cannot change that, the paperwork. How do I fix that? And let me tell you, I probably, you know already, I quit my job just recently, a few days ago.
And in Miami or?
I was working for a telehealth company. And I quit my job, among other reasons, and probably the one that was more close to my heart, the closer to my heart, is one day I was getting insulted by someone that was very frustrated again. And I didn't notice, but my little boy entered in the room. And he heard all that. And when the call ended, he came to me kind of crying and like, mommy, why he yell at you? Why he told you all those things? But you are a doctor, you are helping people. Why he is insulting you? You should leave that job. I mean, you cannot be in a place where they don't treat you well. And I was absolutely shocked because is that example that I am giving to my kid? Is that what I want him to do, to be in a place where he doesn't feel respected, to be in a place where he feels that that probably is not safe and not you know, appreciated? And that's what many of us physicians, nurses, and other healthcare workers, we are feeling. And the sad part is that the patients, they don't know that we are not guilty, or they don't know that we are suffering too. They feel like we are the bad seat, right? They don't know what happens behind the scenes, and they should know, and they should be aware, and they should advocate for us, because if patients start advocating for their caregivers, maybe they will have this, you know, this push to help us to change the system. This is something that needs to be done not only by doctors or nurses. This needs to be done by the community, because at the end, is the community the one that is being more affected today?
I guess she left too, Dr. Noopy.
And
I've never looked back.
No, she has been, yes, Dr. Nupi, she is from England, and she practiced medicine there.
Okay.
She's an amazing advocate also.
I believe you. Hey. This is my mom.
Yes, it is.
She's very good at what she does, trust me.
Oh, absolutely.
I love you, baby.
And if she doesn't, and if she's clumsy, it's because she doesn't sleep.
Oh my god. Okay, please go there. Thank you so much for sharing.
That's an awesome first, and I love it. I'm not gonna edit that out.
Well, I am clumsy. That is true, and I don't sleep very well. That is true too. That's part of the things that I developed in medical school: insomnia. So he's not lying.
Yep. Oh, so I'm really excited for this next part because I want to get into your book. Now, I don't want to get into every single detail because it's going to ruin it for everyone. But again, I want to tell everyone, to my audience members right now, please check out the 3G Cycle of Life. It is a must read. It is amazing. And you should check it out. And I'll make sure I put that link on my show notes, everyone. So again, you get a purchase and it's phenomenal.
Thank you so much.
And yes, but if you don't mind, I would love to get into a little bit of it because I like your quote that your father had about life in the early parts of the book. I kind of want to get into that too. But one, what motivates you to, again, write this book? Because I've never written a book before. I just picture it being so much work, being an author and editing. But maybe you could tell me something different. I don't know.
So I get in my life, everything happens for a reason. And many times I don't know even how these things appear in front of me. I have to be very grateful for the surprises that I received. I was not necessarily planning to write the book. Mm. The book came as an opportunity in front of me. And it came when I was needing it the most. I was very upset with the system, very disappointed. Frustrated, scared. I was going through many things, and I needed to vent. And at that point, later I recognized that I was burned out. At that point, I was so upset with the system that I wanted to blame people. I was not trying to fix it. I was not trying to recover it. I was trying to say this is the fault of, right? What happened with this book is that, and if you check now the chapters, right, you will see that burnout that was actually the reason for me to write the book, right? We will talk about burnout and how everybody else is guilty of us suffering. It's just one chapter in the book. It's called The Monster. And the other 20-something chapters are about positive things.
Yes.
And that was the transformation, not only of the book, but that was the transformation that I went through while writing the book. So for me, it was psychotherapy, kind of free psychotherapy.
Oh, yeah.
And I was able to go back to who I am, right? To my roots, to my values. And I didn't do it by myself. And I always repeat that because this idea that you can recover by yourself, that you will be successful by yourself, that is not realistic. And there is nothing wrong about asking for help. There's nothing wrong about saying, I am not okay, or I don't know it. And that's exactly what I did. I asked for help. I contacted people that I never saw in my life via LinkedIn. I send them messages and I ask them like, hey, I am Miriam, I'm a physician, I want to write about burnout, I want to help people, do you want to help me in the chapter this? And suddenly I will start getting yeses from people that I will never imagine. Yeah. And now this book has more than 30 amazing, amazing individuals that collaborate with me, that taught me, that coach me, that are now friends, and some they are even as close as family. They come from different countries, continents, different careers, different ages, different everything. And they share their stories of how they grew after adversity in different modalities. Because the truth is that life is, I mean, we have as many types of lives as individuals, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody experiments life in the same way. Nobody will learn in the same way. Nobody mm-hmm. will fix things in the same way. So this book opens the opportunity to find who you are, where do you fit, who you feel more related to, yeah. and what you can do for yourself that fits who you are, right? In the mm-hmm. in the most transparent and humanistic way, where we are compassionate and we accept, okay, we are not perfect. That's okay.
Absolutely. And it's funny how you mentioned your main motivation, because that's what motivated me to start podcasts, is like all my emotions inside, all the things that I think that need to be improved in the system, especially the mental health addiction system, the treatment centers, and again, how we can better collaborate with other professionals to, again, help the patient and client out with their issues or diseases or whatever you want to call it that they're struggling with. And that was such a passion of mine, and a voice needed to be let out. And I feel like you have the same passion.
And we are many of us, like you, like me, like Dr. Noopy, right? That we have hope, we have the energy, and we have the you know, we are investing on this collective project of fixing or improving the healthcare mm-hmm. system and mental health in general, right? Because that goes connected, and I feel like it's time for us to kind of accept that we have a role as leaders, that our opinion is important, that we cannot be bystanders anymore, that each of us as individuals, as part of the society, even if we don't have a degree, right?
Yep.
We have an opinion, we have our values, yes. we can be helpful, and that it's something that we need to rebuild together. Because again, this is not a question of the doctor that is suffering or the nurse yes. that is working for long hours. The question is, do you want your kid, your parent, your husband, wife to go into a hospital where people cannot treat you well or as you deserve because they are not receiving the support that they need? Yes. So who is healing the healers?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, for now, nobody in an, you know, in a formal way, because you yes. have a lot of doctors doing efforts, you know, and collaborating, but there is nothing formal and you know, at political level.
Yes.
That's what we need right now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Julie.
Hi, Julie.
Yeah. Again, I just have a couple of broad questions about the book, but I think it's very fascinating. You talk a lot about, again, the cycles, right? So the main cycles of goal, grit, and growth. And as in life, we have certain stages that the cycles are in. And you also mentioned something about, like, there could be conflict within those cycles. And as human beings, we cannot move on to the next cycle of our life until we've overcome that blockage, right? You want to elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah, sure. My dad used to tell me that you will not receive a challenge that you are not ready to confront. And I had many discussions about that with him. It's something that you don't want to hear.
I have a question about your father. Is your father a spiritual man?
He wasn't religious for many years. It's very interesting that now in his 80s, he started to be a little more religious, but he was always very spiritual and mm-hmm. used to do yoga. He was a yoga teacher, instructor. Okay. And yes, my dad is a very special human being. I will tell you, I love my mom too, for sure, yeah. but my dad is in a different level.
No, because when your father said that, I watch a lot of videos on spirituality and mediums, and I'm not sure if you believe that or not, but there's a spiritual theory out there for human beings, as in we're spirits and there's obviously a heaven and hell. And what your father said in that quote really related to their beliefs, as in we're spirits and we try to get to a higher level of being, our subconscious. And there's blockage, or in our past life, there could be negative issues. So our spirits go down to earth heaven, and this is our earth school, I mean. And again, we're trying to overcome that blockage or whatever that we didn't do in our past life. We're trying to get over that now to get to a higher level. And that really reminded me of that quote that your father mentioned in the book.
Yeah, and my dad will describe it exactly like you're saying, right? This is the university of life, right?
Yes.
The university of life.
Earth school.
It's something that you don't want to hear when you are immersed in your drama, right?
Yep.
You go back on time and you remember a situation and now you say, oh, that was true. Yep. Looks like reasonable. But in the moment where you are, you know, scared and upset, that's something that used to make me feel very, yep, you know. But yes, so I see life like that, right? In some way, I always describe life like as a video game, right? Mm-hmm. You enter into the video game, you select the video game, yep, and it has cycles, right? Levels, and you start the level, and probably you have no idea even how to move the you know, and do you need to jump? What's the value of this coin and that thing and that other, and suddenly you develop the skill and you learn, right? And you probably will not finish that level at the first attempt. You will have to go back again and again, right? And okay, every time you will be learning some skills, you don't die immediately. You have. And then when you close that level, when you have all the skills of that level, so you jump to level 2 and then, yep, you continue, right? And I see life the same way. Probably my modification is this concept of the 3G, right? Because I have been asking myself, how do I do things? And why I ask myself, because I have been described as resilient. That seems something that people normally tell me, how do you do this, how you move on all the time and you rebound? And I was like, I have no idea, do I do that? I didn't even notice it. But during COVID, when things were very serious, and this was not something that I was able to leave to just good luck, right? This will happen again and we will be okay. I wanted to know how I will do my magic again, because this time this is serious, right? And how do I teach others to do it too? So trying to understand how I function, I discovered that I really live my life based on goals. That's the first thing that motivates me. I need to have a goal, whatever it is. And sometimes goals could be obligations, right? You need to finish school, you need to learn how to drive your car at this age. And sometimes they are dreams. I want to drive I want to write a book, or I want to go to Italy.
Yes.
Whatever it is, right? So I start with goals. And if you set goals appropriately, right, and if you're very careful to setting feasible and appropriate goals, probably your cycle will be easier. And that's something that I try to do. The second step of my cycle is grit. That's the second G. And grit for me is this fuel that you have inside of you that keep you, you know, yes, going no matter what. You it's your passion. It's really the understanding that you have a purpose, that you are doing this because you know why. Mm-hmm. And even that you are going through this challenge and this effort, but you know why. You have you know, a reason. And many times this grit doesn't come necessarily only from you, but may come from others, because the days that you are down, and those days exist, you will have your cheerleaders that are your family members, your friends, your mentors, right? That will help you to go back in the road and keep going. Last but not least, in theory, if you close the cycle, you are achieving your goals, right? But I don't think that we achieve our goals all the time. I believe that many times, not only that we don't achieve them because we are not able to, we were not prepared to achieve the goal at the first attempt, but many times we change our mind. I wanted to be a psychologist. I ended up being a doctor. Did I fail? Nobody could say that I fail in life, right? Mm-hmm. So this concept of failure disappear, right? And therefore you are more, you are more compassionate with yourself when you remove failure from the cycle and you just change it with the idea of, okay, I didn't do it at the first attempt, I will try again. Or I didn't do it because I didn't want to do it anymore, I changed my mind, right? Or I did it, yay!
Yep.
Next level. And that's the reason why I call this growth, because no matter what happens, you can get the the cycle close, getting your goal, you can fail your goal at the first attempt and try again, or you can just change your mind. But if you allow yourself, if you give yourself the opportunity, you were learning during that period something new. You were developing new skills.
Do you think growth can come from failure? For the example of, let's just use this as an example of, like, let's say you go and try to get into a program like veterinary school, whatever. You try 3 times, 4 times, 5 times, and you're just exhausted and you're mentally burnt out. So you just make the decision to do a different career path. Is that considered failure, or could failure be you never trying in the first place?
I believe, we could say, we could use the word failure, because probably is the one that colloquially we will use, right? That's how people, I don't think necessarily that it's failure not getting inside of medical school or veterinary school. My concern comes with the fact that you try a second time, you try a third time, right? And you didn't decide to reassess, to be self-aware, right? Mm-hmm. To consider plan B, plan C at that time. I believe that that's where the failure comes. It's not on the fact that you didn't enter or you didn't achieve your goal. It's that you didn't, you were not able to let go on time, and that you push yourself to a point that now you are burned out, that you are sick, that you are depressed, right? And that you put all your energies in something that was not feasible to achieve, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is what I would consider failure. And if you recognize on time that something is not for you, or that you don't have the skills, I don't feel that you are doing something wrong or you are failing. I believe that you are being, you know, self-aware. You are identifying your gaps, but also you are identifying your strengths, and you are planning, okay, maybe I will be much better on this, and you change. And how many of us, we change careers, right? Even after completing the careers, and there are many stories, and you find these successful individuals doing something absolutely different.
It's funny, I'm thinking, like, you could use this in relationships in life, like boyfriend, girlfriend, or whoever, like the same thing, like same mentality.
You can do it with healthcare, right? Issues. Yep. I'm now in the process of opening my clinic.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. My virtual clinic. And the goal of this clinic is to use this concept, the 3G cycle, to educate patients so they can be more self-aware. They can have more control of their lives without feeling that they are failing, right? And let's think about obesity, for example, right? You plan to reduce 10 pounds. And if you... do it like, yes, I will reduce 10 pounds at some point, wherever. I don't think that you will be successful. If you do it setting appropriate goals, I will reduce 10 pounds doing this in this amount of time. I will consider my pros and my cons, who will help me, what could be a difficult moment. We have a wedding, so probably I will eat that day. So what do I do to compensate for that, right? If you prepare yourself and you have your cheerleaders, who will be coaching me? Who do I call so we can go for a walk every morning, right? That's your greed. And then, well, maybe you went down the 10 pounds, maybe not, but you learn something and you try again, right? And you adjust and you collect information. It's kind of a process, right? When we do quality improvement, right? When we reassess. And that's exactly goal, greed, grow, right? Mm-hmm. Use for control of diabetes, use of control of hypertension, stop smoking, better lifestyles. So you can use it for everything in life. I believe so.
Absolutely. Well, Miriam, I had an absolute blast with you on the show. I had so much fun. Normally when I do to close off things, I want to ask you right now, like, what are your goals in the next 5 to 10 years? And also, but I think it's super cool about your clinic. Is it to, like, extend your clinic? Is it to write another book? Do you have any, again, future goals or plans?
So I will tell you my goal number one. My goal number one is to become a better mom for my kids. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why I'm doing all the changes that I am doing. I want to be, want to be a better mom for my kids, and that comes with the fact that I need to still keep working on myself. And there are many things that I wrote about in that book, and mm-hmm. that I confess in the book that I'm still learning, yeah. Boundaries and other things. So I'm still working on myself and my own development and learning and becoming a better mom, a better wife, a better me, right? Yeah. And that's, I believe, my goal number one. And that will bring the rest. And with that, yes, I want to, this clinic is supposed to serve all Florida as a virtual clinic. My idea is to bring a little of evidence-based medicine, but also hope and a holistic approach to help people to bring this, you know, this idea of recovering control in your own life and being accountable for your own decisions so you can be successful and stop being a victim of what's happening to you, but you take the decisions. Give that empower patients, mm-hmm. empower the community. That's my goal with that. And I have in my heart a new book that needs to be coming. But I need to step by step. I need to finish this clinic, put it, you know, there. And yes, I have in my heart a book that will be at some point part of it. The version of in Spanish of the book, the version in Spanish of my book will be ready, I believe, in four more weeks. So I will be able to transmit this to my Latin population, los Latinos que me estén escuchando, bien en español también. So
beautiful.
It's coming in Spanish too.
Oh, thank you, Diana.
Diana, oh my God, I want to say something. Dr. Bongoño, she is another spectacular advocate. She's a urologist. She is supporting mm-hmm. physicians since COVID started with mm-hmm. burnout prevention. She has a program that supports physicians. It's amazing what she's doing, what she's achieving. So just to say that, Spanish versions, yes, just to say it's like we are a big group of people trying mm-hmm. to create changes. And I want to say, Jacob, I'm very grateful and it's an honor to be in your program. It's an honor to be talking to you. You have the heart in the right place. And thank you for allowing me and my friends to share, you know, a positive message and to empower people and to advocate for the healthcare workers. They need so much support.
Well, again, the pleasure is all mine. It was truly amazing having you on. I hope to have you on again someday if you ever have the time.
Yes.
Also, if any of my audience members want to get a hold of you, is there a particular email, website they could use to send you a message?
So I'm most of the time at LinkedIn, so they can find me at LinkedIn. I'm Dr. C, so it's easy to find me. And I just open my accounts in Facebook and Instagram. Mm. It's Dr. C. Wellbeing MD, so they can find me there too.
Excellent. I'll make sure I put all that information on my show notes, as well as, again, your book information. It'll all be one click away for my audience. And again, Miriam, it was a blessing having you on. It really was.
Thank you so much. And thank you to Dr. Nupi and Dr. Londoño for being here and everybody else that was here hearing us. Please go home today and be proud of yourself and think about how you will be helping others and be kind with yourself, because that's the only way that we will be able to help and support others. We are all in this together. That's correct.
Absolutely. Blessings. All right. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.
I again want to thank Miriam for being an awesome and amazing special guest on my show. I just want to thank all of my listeners for your support. And just to inform everyone that the information expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a medical doctor or a licensed mental health therapist. And if anyone has any further questions for me, you can reach me at my email address, behaviorhealthintegration121@gmail.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn at Jacob Minig, where you will find more educational posts on psychotherapy, trauma, and addiction. And finally, you can follow me on my website, which is behaviorhealthintegration.org. I also want to inform everyone that there is a great new device out there called Calmigo. It's a breathing device meant to control and manage your breathing rates and the depth of your breathing as you inhale and exhale to, again, help relieve any type of anxiety and stress-like symptoms. And if you do put the BHI podcast into the promo code, you get $30 off this amazing device. It is a once-in-a-lifetime deal, and you will not be disappointed. All right, everyone, until next time, have a good day. Bye.